Hello everyone, it's Dr. Joanne Dahlketter with Performing Edge Coaching International, and it is August the 12th, 2021. And just want to welcome everyone here. If you have questions, you can just press star 6 on your phone to, if you're muted, to unmute. And also you can just send me an email with any questions that you have, and happy to answer those on the call here. On this call tonight, or also today, or also for the next calls, or if it's something that is urgent, then I'll just answer your email right away to help you. So, yeah, I just wanted to welcome everyone on our call here, and today I wanted to talk about, since the Olympics are just over, talk about Olympic lessons and tips for all our athletes, what we learned from the Tokyo 2021 Olympics, and think about your experiences in watching the Olympics there. I've had my athletes at the last 7 Olympic Games and had several Olympic gold medalists, and so I wanted to talk about my experiences working with athletes, and also to help you to be able to, take the lessons that we learned, and that you can work with top athletes as well, Olympians, professionals, could be just elite athletes of any level, or you can choose to just work with the athletes in your area, and regardless, the same kind of lessons apply, I think, from the Olympics. So today I want to talk about specific areas that you could work on. You could think about working on Olympic hopefuls for the next Winter Olympics, which are actually only 6 months away. So it's really because the Summer Olympics were delayed for a year. We have these next Winter Olympics coming up right away. And so there's possibilities there for working with athletes who are training for to try to make the Olympics in 6 months from now. So that's exciting. And let's talk today about what are the key points, learning points from these Olympics in 2021, and how can we apply these strategies to our own athlete clients, regardless of what level they're at. And just think about what difficulties did you observe that athletes had during these Olympic Games, and how did they recover? How did athletes recover from these mistakes or not recover? Those are all important questions to ask, I think, here, and that we can address. And think about what are the inspirational stories and what can they teach us from these games, that we things that happened during the games. And how would you have coached the athletes that had a tough time in the Olympics? Athletes that were really struggling, like Simone Biles or some of the other top athletes that had, or some of the lesser-known athletes that were really having a difficult time struggling. How would you have handled that? If you can, think about that. It might be really helpful. And also we can talk about, the mental health of elite athletes that's coming to the forefront during these Olympics, and the new pressures that athletes were facing. The next Olympics and Winter Olympics, we probably won't be finished with the pandemic or the COVID-19. So it may go on into the next Olympics as well. And how to deal with that as an ongoing thing with these new Delta variants and new variants of COVID-19. And then we can talk about risks that athletes are dealing with in the different sports, and how they think about those risks in their minds. And want to talk about helping your athletes to decide, when to keep going or when it's time to withdraw or take a different path. That's really important to be able to help athletes decide that. Most coaches only want their athletes to keep going and going and just go for the win no matter what. But I think in these Olympics we learned that you can make different choices. It's important to look at your long-term health as well as your performance. And let's talk about also the value working with Olympians or any kind of elite athletes for your coaching practice. I think it's really key that it can help you with your credibility, with attracting more athletes, and even just having one elite athlete can really help with getting more athletes into your practice. So that's a really good thing to think about. It's not essential, obviously. You can have a successful practice no matter what. But it's just something, an added value. And then just let's talk about inside stories, case studies, my work on site with Olympians and how you can do the same if you want. These Olympics, how were the athletes doing during the biggest event of their lives? And if you would like, how can you attract high-level athletes and or Olympians to work with? We'll talk about that. And then the upcoming Winter Olympics in 2022, planning ahead, how you could be part of that upcoming Olympics. Mistakes to avoid, do's and don'ts, working with top athletes. And what's different about working with Olympians and elite athletes than anyone else? A lot of things are very much the same, but some things are different that to be considered that I could help you with. And what issues are Olympians now facing, going into this next Winter Olympics, too, with this era of COVID-19? And then we can also talk about specific areas you can work on with Olympic hopefuls and what are you as performing edge coaches, where are you needed the most and how can you get valuable testimonials from Olympians to help with your credibility. So, yeah, let's dive into all of that now and happy to answer your questions. You can send me an email or also... I know some of you ask about, what's the different ways that athletes deal with psychological pressures at these Olympics. So that was one of the questions I got from you as coaches. And so wanted to talk about that. How are athletes dealing with the pressure and how can we help them with that? As these Tokyo Olympics were some of the most unusual Olympics we've ever seen. And, of course, athletes had to take a complete year off. Took place a year after they were scheduled. And then, of course, they're shrouded by this pandemic the whole time. And so having to be isolated a lot of the time, wearing masks and without support there, without their usual support. And so there were no real fans in attendance. So all these things are really totally different than we've seen before. And so especially, athletes couldn't even have their families attend. It was so sad, with one of the Paralympians deciding to withdraw because she wasn't even allowed to bring her assistant along. And she was blind and mostly deaf. It's just so sad that athletes like that weren't allowed to bring an assistant along. When you're blind, you've got a whole, and almost completely deaf, you've got a whole different set of pressures and anxieties to deal with traveling. And so, you can think also about not only working with Olympians, but Paralympians, because that's coming up shortly here with the Paralympics. So those athletes are just amazing to work with as well. Wheelchair athletes and just all kinds. So those are some things to consider. And usually with the Paralympians, they don't have as much support as Olympians do, and they're not as much in the limelight. So they really appreciate the support. So you might do a search on that of Paralympians that need that might need some support, and they are really open to having someone work with them, and you could offer to work with them on a complimentary basis for a few sessions kind of thing, because a lot of them don't have the financial support. But some of them do. So that's a, oh, another consideration. They're just such a wonderful group to work with, and they're so so appreciative. So I just wanted to talk now about some of the ways that athletes deal with their anxiety and the pressures, many that you know about, and then how all this is amped up during these Olympics, during the Olympics in general, but these Olympics in particular, because they're so unusual, with no fans and the pandemic surrounding them. So, already we know psychology has been at the forefront of these games, and with all the extra burdens that athletes are carrying. And what's really interesting about these Tokyo Olympic Games, I think, has been how the athletes have been talking about mental health. You know, Simone Biles, of course, and we heard with gymnastics, and then Naomi Osaka with her tennis, withdrawing from the French Open, and then going to the Olympics to compete, and Katie Ledecky talking about that here at these Olympics. And then, of course, Michael Phelps came in and was weighing in on Simone Biles' mental health issues and talking about his own from the past Olympics. So all these Olympians are talking about the tremendous psychological stress that these games have been causing. And, it feels like a real shift, I think, in how athletes are making their mental health issues public and talking about that more in not just to each other, but in the press and to the media. And I think that's a really good thing. It highlights our sports psychology field and what we do to what we can contribute to help athletes. And I think it can help to have more athletes reach out to us, to you, for more help in this area, because it's becoming okay to talk about this and there's less of a stigma attached. So I think that's a really good thing that's come out of these Olympics. One thing that I wanted to note is to draw a distinction between mental performance and mental health. Of course, they're really very similar, closely related, but they're distinct in a way. We're thinking in terms of mental performance being, being able to perform at your best, focus, to perform when it counts. And that's, mainly what we're working on as performing edge coaches, as sports psychology coaches here. But where mental health is really, about wellness, taking care of your overall health and, the ability to function well and to operate well in the real world, in all of the world that you're dealing with your school, with your work and family. And so mental health is a broader picture, I think. And so you can't really talk about mental performance is one aspect of that, but it's hard to talk about mental performance without also talking about mental health. So it's good to, I think, distinguish between those two things. You could think of mental performance as a kind of a piece of the pie, with overall pie being mental health and physical health. And what I wanted to note about that is, when we're considering elite performance and all these high-pressure situations and competitions and the Olympics, it can become a really unhealthy situation, because you're, of course, you're in this elite performance context, and most athletes are training 7-8 hours a day, 7 days a week for years and years for the chance to maybe compete for a few seconds. And just a lot of times there's very little downtime, and there's very little balance in a person's life, oftentimes because their whole life is devoted to their sport. They may not have much social life or much time to play or have fun, do other things. And so I think, you know, oftentimes what we're doing as sports psychology coaches is helping them to function in this really elite performance setting, recognizing that sometimes there's aspects of it that are often unhealthy. And so it's, I think we're talking about, you know, most of the time with sports psychology, as coaches, we're talking about training for mental performance at these games. But with different sports, it might require, you know, different kinds of psychological training, of course. And, you know, there's so many different sports in the Olympics, just amazing. And there's, you know, precision sports, maybe they only last a few seconds. Like I worked with, you know, athletes at Olympic Games in Athens, where I worked with pole vaulters, which is a very precise kind of sport. And, you know, there's sports like archery or shooting, those kinds of sports that are very precision oriented. And then there's other ones, let's say, that are endurance oriented, where, you know, marathoners have to train their bodies to do the same action over and over again for many, many miles. So, you know, there's a difference in what we're working on there. So precision sports, like with shooting, for example, you know, or archery, or, you know, if you're off by a millimeter, whatever the measurement is, you know, that can mean the difference between having a gold or having nothing at all. It's just very precise, and your sport only takes a few seconds. And so, like with art, with shooting, they're doing a lot of cardiovascular training the it's a skill that where you want to slow down your heartbeat, because actually the beating of the heart while you're shooting could throw off the skill. So you're learning to slow down your resting heart rate, and by doing with that, you know, mental training would involve, you know, that nice slow deep breathing and relaxing, and then in the competition they actually squeeze the trigger in between the beats of their heart. So it's a different kind of thing. You're learning to relax the mind, so you're relaxing the body as well. Whereas something like an endurance event, like a marathon, you know, or any, a lot of those for swimming, biking, running, triathlons, you're visualizing yourself in all these different scenarios, different circumstances, difficult circumstances. So, you know, you can visualize yourself behind in a race or losing energy and then getting a second wind. You can imagine the wind coming on, or just imagine all the different scenarios that you might come up against. And those things can help you prepare for the events. So it's there's a difference in depending on the sport, but the good news is you don't have to know that sport really well in order to work with someone. You can learn that very quickly along the way. For instance, I'm working with two 13-year-old kids right now who are doing fencing, and I don't know. I started out not knowing much about fencing at all, but I'm learning very quickly what that involves. And most of the time, athletes are, they just want your expertise in sports psychology, and they don't care if you're an expert in that particular sport, especially something like fencing. They want to know that you are an expert in mental training. That's what matters. So that's the great news about our profession, is you can work with any area, with any sport, regardless if you know that sport or not, and really help athletes. And you can learn very quickly what is involved with that sport. So I just wanted to talk also a little bit about the role of age in different sports. because most of these athletes are younger and they have a brain that's still developing. They're going from, you know, being a teenager to, say, you know, their 20s in the marathon case, say the 30s, or sometimes I think we have the oldest athlete in this Olympics was 46 years old in gymnastics, amazing age. And it's interesting that with the brain, the developing brain, the prefrontal cortex, that's the higher order thinking part of our brain. It's that part that where we do the our planning and our executive function, our looking into the future and seeing what the consequences are and making decisions. All these high complex thoughts. Higher thinking is going on, and that part of the brain doesn't actually fully develop until age 27. And so many of these athletes we're looking at in these Tokyo Olympics, they have developmentally, they don't have a fully formed prefrontal cortex. And so I think what's important, the things that are the major roles of the prefrontal cortex are to, you know, think about the future, understand our actions and how they're going to affect us in the future. And say with Simone Biles, of course, when she, the previous Olympics, she was 19 or at least 20, where she was much younger, and most of the time we don't have that fear factor hasn't fully developed yet as well. And so she talks about now that she's 24, the skills that she performed are scarier than they used to be. She's got a different brain now, more developed at age 24. She understands the consequences of things and has a better understanding. And because of that development of her prefrontal cortex, she understands what the consequences are of, you know, falling, or that you could actually really hurt yourself. You could end up in a wheelchair, or you know, spinal cord injuries, that kind of thing. And she may not have thought about that earlier on. So it's interesting that that aspect can really play with your mind. In some ways, the younger the athlete, the better. If they don't have that fully developed prefrontal cortex. But as we know, Simone Biles, she went on to win the bronze medal in the balance beam. She, you know, dropped out of the team event and the all-around athletes. But I wanted to talk about her and some of the lessons that we learned, and then talk about some of the just experiences in general. I think many people think, you know, Simone Biles delivered a gold medal performance, you know, because of all the challenges she was facing. And I think, I think one of the important lessons that she showed us that we can teach our athletes is, you know, when you're in a difficult position like that, she was thinking not only of herself, but of her whole team with a team competition. And she said she didn't want to risk the team losing a medal because of her, because she was having difficulty with focusing and with what's called the twisties, where you lose your orientation in the air. And so I think she said she didn't want to risk the team because of her mess-ups. So it's a really good lesson for us, to a leadership lesson that you can teach your athletes, that you have to think of the whole team context, not just your own. So I think that's an important thing to be able to teach your athletes. Another thing, I think that with that situation she was in with Biles, she was showing us how to overcome short-term thinking and be able to redefine what is winning. And so, you know, kind of understand what's at stake for yourself, for your teammates, for for others around you. So be able to think long term. What is this going to mean for myself, for other people, and be able to just be able to, by stepping aside with the team, she demonstrated a kind of strategy that would elevate the team and keep the risk away both from herself and the team. And it allowed her to, it's for the other athletes to excel and for the team members to actually get that silver medal. So I think that's an important lesson also, to overcome that short-term thinking, to empower others. And also another lesson I think to learn here from what she was going through is that it's okay to be flexible, and we're all entitled to change our minds. And just like Biles, she decided to compete in the balance beam a few days later after completely shutting down first. I think it shows you got to be flexible enough to adapt when the time comes, and to be able to have that, you'd be able to consider all the different possibilities and consider being able to what you have, what you can do, what you can't do, and to take your time to think that over. I think that's really good, to be able to teach our athletes to do that, to make adjustments and be flexible in our thinking. And another lesson I wanted to highlight that came out of that situation is just to be able to know your limits. You know, everyone has, we all have limits. And I think, you know, not it's important to not let your ego stand in the way of the team's potential if you're working with a team. Or also your own, to know the consequences of what you're doing. So it's important to know what you can do, what you can't do, know your limits. And know, I think we can, as sports psychology coaches, we can help our athletes to know, to make those important decisions. You know, when is it time to push forward? When is it time to step back? When is it time to take a pause on something? Even in the middle of the Olympics, you know, it took a tremendous courage for her to do that. So knowing your limits is an important lesson. Another lesson I wanted to bring out was just to be able to tune into your own thought process and tune out. Don't let social media take over. You know, tune out the noise there, because it's, you know, when she made that decision, the social media erupted with all this positive and negative chatter and all this stuff. And when you end up reading all of that, it can really bring you down. But I think she tried to stay away from that, from just looking at the social media. We just kind of lose ourselves in trying to make everyone else happy. It's important to just know what you can do and be able to just stay within your own thought process and not let others take over, not let social media take over. So also I wanted to emphasize that it's important to connect with others when you're going through a lot of things. And that's why we're here, sports psychology coaches, to be able to encourage our athletes to come to us when they need help, when they need decision making, and be able to, and our job is to actively listen, as well as the athlete's job, to be able to engage in open dialogue and have those hard conversations. I think that to help make the difficult decisions that we have to make in life. So it's a good, important lesson to teach our athletes to connect along the way. A lot of times athletes become very isolated and only, you know, listening to perhaps there is too much on social media, but they need to be able to listen to connect with you as their sports psychology coach. And we should encourage them to connect with people that they trust in general. And then, of course, one key lesson, too, that I wanted to emphasize here with the mobiles and with all the athletes that we're bringing out mental issues is to prioritize mental health. Just because we're working on mental performance doesn't mean that we ignore our mental health, and the two are very much related, and that your mental health should be to the highest priority. And I think a lot of times we're just thinking performance, and that's the key area, but we really need to look at the bigger picture of a person's overall mental health. And if you're a psychologist or if you're trained in being able to work with clinical issues, that's okay to go into that area. Or if you feel like the athlete is really having a difficult time and having a mental disorder, it's okay to refer them to someone else, to a psychologist, while you work on the mental performance issues. So, but I think as sports psychology coaches, we can work on mental health too. You can work on balancing one's life and being able to how to take care of yourself and how to give yourself rest, how to communicate with your coach, how to communicate with your family, and all that's going to help with taking care of your mental health. So those are some lessons I wanted to emphasize with Simone Biles and with the other athletes that are emphasizing mental health. And I just wanted to say when you are working with an athlete that's going through a lot, you know, you can realize they may need to work through, slowing some things down, being able to add relaxation into their training, working with athletes to their confidence, being able to tell them it's your choice, do whatever you need to do to feel physically, mentally, emotionally prepared. So those are all things that we as sports psychology coaches can do. And it's important to know that, for instance, with Simone Biles, she dropped out of the team and the all-around competition, but then was able to make the decision to return the next week to the getting a bronze on the beam, and it shows, being a really strong athlete. And I think we need to encourage athletes to make the decision to not only take care of themselves during the competition, but when to take yourself out of a competition, and know yourself well enough when you need to pause, when you need to reflect, or add different training techniques. I'm working with a golfer right now that we're talking about adding the mental part, the visualization, to his pre-shot routine. So every golfer has a pre-shot routine, but he's never thought about actually adding the mental portion to that. So being able to, take a deep breath, take a practice swing, and then take a moment to visualize where you want the ball to go before you do the swing in your game. So being able to know yourself well enough and for your own timing, I think it's really important to take good care of ourselves that way. So I also now I wanted to just talk about some other things that lessons I wanted to emphasize are that, for your athletes that we learned from the Olympics is that mindset matters enormously. And I think especially with these Olympics, there was just so much mindset was really key here. And I think it's important to encourage your athletes to be brave, courageous and vulnerable, be able to talk about your feelings. So all those things can come together here. Now, for the, I wanted to emphasize to you, I wanted to mention also that, you know, I worked with an aerial skier in the Vancouver Olympics who had the same thing as Simone Biles had, the twisties, as we heard it called. You know, she was doing, with her aerial skiing, doing triple flips in the air, coming down on, you know, way up in the air. We're just talking huge air, huge amounts going up in the sky. And she, this was during the Olympic trials, and she lost her orientation and came down and fell on her head and got a concussion. And so she had a real, I mean, it demonstrated what dramatic results can happen from getting disoriented in the air. And fortunately, it had a good outcome that she got the concussion, went to the hospital, got good treatment. I continued to work with her while she was in the hospital, and she got a call from the Olympic Committee while she was there in the hospital saying, "Hey, congratulations, she made the Olympic team anyway." This was in the Olympic trials when she fell. But they were saying, "You made the Olympic team anyway," based on, you know, getting the number of points that you got during the World Cup tour, because they gave the second position to that person who got the most points in the World Cup, and she had done that, so she made the team, but she's obviously still in the hospital with a concussion, so she had to, you know, we had to do, because I call it emergency sports psychology, you know, being able to create a new movie in your mind to not see the fall, but be able to see see yourself performing well and just seeing your best performances and playing that over and over in your mind again to imagine that you're the director of the movie. So we did that. We just worked on staying positive and being grateful that she made the Olympic team, and she had 4 weeks to recover before the actual Olympics, and she was able to recover well and able to perform well at the Olympics and not have that situation. Yeah, some athletes could get post-traumatic stress syndrome, PTSD from that sort of thing, but she was able to just recover really well and be able to perform at her best there. So it's an example of how something traumatic can happen, but you can help athletes in those really crisis situations. This is the time that we're probably needed the most to be. And yeah, you know, the fact that we worked together before that, and that she trusted me and knew my voice, and that was a, we made lots of visualizations, and just hearing my voice was very comforting to her. And it was just a really good experience. So you can have that same kind of experience with when something happens to your athletes and realize that you could be the one to make all the difference in their performance. So I wanted to just take a moment to talk about, you know, the next Olympics that are coming up will be the Winter Olympics in 6 months from now. And you still can, if you would like to, are interested in working with someone, you can, you know, good ways to connect with people or to go to events if you get a chance to go to a practice event with Olympic trials or Olympic hopefuls. You can just search on that, Olympic hopefuls in your area is probably best. In your area of expertise, in your geological area as well as the geographic area, and also just areas of sports that you know well, and you can put that on your website or social media that you're maybe willing to take on one or two athletes to work with them on a complimentary basis for a time when they're training for the Olympics. And yeah, you're able to that you can work with people that way. It's best to start with contacting people 4 to 6 months beforehand, but if not, then 3 months is okay too before the Olympics, and be able to, because most of the time, like 1 or 2 months before, athletes have their support team in place and they don't want maybe to start with anyone new unless it's a emergency situation. And so one good way to start with them is to, you know, to just chat with them. You might find on social media, you can search on your, we had that one sports psychology coach from this program, a performing edge coach who was in the martial arts, and she looked on Instagram and other social media and found different athletes in her sport in martial arts talking about that they were needing help, needing support with the mental part. And she would just instant message them or private message them and say, you know, I work in this area. Visualization can really help, and I'd be willing to work with you to help with that, and on a complimentary basis at first. And she was able to work with a national champion that way. So just even not knowing someone, just contacting them through their social media sites can often really make a difference. And you can really connect with top athletes that way. And once you get connected with them, I'd say to interview them and offer to work with them. Or you might just offer to make them one or two custom visualization audios, and that can help with them really wanting to work with you more, because sometimes that's not as much of a commitment kind of thing. It's good to do your athlete research first, look up their name online, what's their recent events, what's their upcoming goals, what have they achieved so far, and then so that you're familiar with what they're doing. And be able to just talk about the pressures that they are going through. Many athletes are going through a lot of pressure. It's best to not put them on a pedestal. That's one of the mistakes that we make. We tend to sort of put them way up high and think that, why would they want to work with me kind of thing. But just to see them as human beings that have mental issues just like everyone else, and just to be human, be very approachable to them. It's important, of course, not to break confidentiality, to not tell anyone else, guess who I'm working with, kind of thing, but to keep that client privacy, and just work with the present situation. I think it's better not to go into a lot of past issues unless they bring those up, but they just at first to just talk about what they need help with right now. Later on, you could go into any of the past issues. And then with testimonials, it's important you could get that later after you've worked with them for a while, but you don't want to say, I'll work with you in exchange for a testimonial, because that's unethical and puts way too much pressure on the athlete. But you want to wait until you've worked with them, had some small results or had a good rapport, and then you can ask, could I have a quotation from you if that would be okay with you, and get it in writing, like with an email kind of thing. And that can, then you can get that way by written text testimonials, or audio or video is best, but all of those can work just fine. So that could help with your credibility, and it can really make a difference in the lives of these top athletes. So next time we'll talk more about any topics that you want me to address. We'll talk about those as well. And we always have our calls, you know, the second and fourth Thursday of the month. Today's the 12th of August, and our next call either August 26th, so you could put that on your calendar. So it's at 9 a.m. here, Pacific, and 12 noon in Eastern Coast. And so I want to thank you so much for all of you attending, and feel free to send me an email if you have questions or other topics you'd like me to address for this next time. So I'll have this recording up shortly, and just such an honor to work with all of you, and just want to really encourage you to continue the good work that we're doing here. And I'll really look forward to our next call on August the 26th. And in the meantime, I'll put the recording up and give you some more tools as well. All right. Have a great day. Thank you now. Have a great day. Bye.